Now, I wasn't originally going to use a scripture passage today, and you'll see why, but then I chickened out, and so I don't have a reader, so I'm going to have to read it myself. It's from the very beginning of the Bible. It's from Genesis 1, 1 to 5. It says this: "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light.' And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. And God called light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day." A couple of weeks ago, I was mentioning to you, and I've been talking about this on and off for a few months now, that Christianity at its core is a story. It's a story. And I showed you a video from the Bible Project that gave an overview of the story of the Bible, because the Christian story is the story of the Bible. They are essentially the same thing. The Bible is a very big book. My own personal study Bible, the Bible I use, is 1,109 pages long. That's a long book. And there's some pretty dense sections, too, so it makes it a very long book, a big book. They say it takes about 75 to 80 hours to read the Bible, the whole thing through. So if you were to read the Bible a half an hour per day, it would take you about 6 months to finish it. It's a long book. And yet, for as big a book as the Bible is, the basic storyline, what we might call the plot line, is rather simple. Yet if I were to ask you today to lay out the plot line of the Bible in a paragraph, could you do it? The Christian story is ultimately that simple plot line, if you want to be really succinct about it. And I imagine that most people would be hard-pressed to do that. How do you take an 1,100-page-plus book and condense it down into a paragraph? Take a 10,000 or 20,000-word thesis and put it into a much shorter thesis proposal. That's a tough thing to do, actually. And yet the Bible Project shows us that it can be done, because they do it in 5 minutes and 30 seconds. What is the Christian story about, and why does it matter to you and me who have gathered here, and why should it matter to other people? Sally and I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we've started a new series called The English Game. It's on Netflix. Anybody seen it yet? If you like English drama, have you seen it? Yeah. It's a really great show. It's about the beginnings of soccer, what they call football, a football association in the 1870s. And it's been something that we really look forward to watching. The only disappointment we have is we're now at episode 5, and there's only 6 episodes in the whole series. So it's almost like over before it got started. It feels like we're almost at the very end, and we've just got into it. So it's a bit sad that way, but otherwise it's a brilliant series. And watching The English Game reminds me again that stories are the undercurrent of human life. We live on stories. People love reading and watching stories. We're tormented by stories too. And we gain so much of our human knowledge and our human wisdom through stories. Stories shape our lives. In fact, I think we live out our stories. There's stories that are operating on the inside of us, and we're giving expression to those stories in the way we live in the world. These stories have been given to us by family, by culture. They've been absorbed by us. Sometimes we've even chosen these stories for ourselves, and we, each of us, become now a living, almost walking storybook, an expression of stories in the way we live in the world. And I'll give you an example. My next-door neighbor for 15 years would say this to me. Say this, and it's up on the slide there. "Life's a bitch, and then you die." Think about that. That's kind of brutal, isn't it, really? Life's a bitch, and then you die. And he didn't just say it once. He said it over and over again to me. And when you think about it, that is a story of sorts about life, isn't it? It's an interpretation of life. It's a plot line. We might say it's a summary statement, a one-line encapsulation of a story. It gives us the basic outline of a life plot. Life is hard because it's full of pain, suffering, and disappointment, and then you die. That means there's no ultimate purpose or point to life. There's no ultimate purpose to pain or suffering or disappointment. And then everything leads to a dead end. And then we come to the ultimate dead end and we just disappear. And this was the operating story of my neighbor's life. Like, he really believed this. That's how he lived his life. Life's a bitch and then you die. And he faithfully lived out this story in his own life, day in and day out. His life was an embodied expression of what he deeply believed about life. The plot line that ran through his life. It was true to him. And it became, in a sense, a self-fulfilling prophecy of sorts, like all beliefs do. What do you suppose a person's life looks like when they accept this as the plot line of their life? When you organize your life around the premise that life is about ultimately pain, suffering, and disappointment, with no final purpose and no final point to it. And I can tell you from personal experience watching his life over those 15 years, it's not very pretty. It's not pretty at all. It's actually kind of depressing to watch people live that plot out in their own life. If you built a life on a different organizing principle, a different assumption, would it lead to a different outcome? If someone's plot line was different, would it change the character of that person's life? What do you suppose? If the basic plot line of that person's life was rooted in a different set of assumptions or expectations, would it make any difference in the end? For instance, imagine a story based on this quote, and I mentioned this to you about a month ago. If the only prayer you ever say in your life is thank you, that would suffice. Now compare that to life's a bitch and then you die. Is there a difference between the two of them? It's almost undeniable, isn't it? There's a difference. Do you think that there's a difference in the kind of life someone lives when they live with one plot line versus the other? Does that make any difference? And I'm assuming that I can already see many of you nodding. Yes, of course it does. I was hoping you'd answer yes. Most of you are. There's a fundamental difference between those two plot lines. And it seems self-evident to me and probably to you as well that the differences between the two plot lines makes all the difference in life. It makes all the difference in the character and quality of the life that we live. And how to interpret the events of our lives that we go through too. Of course it would make a difference. I ask this because there's a prevailing mood today that says that all stories are equal. You have your story or stories, I have my story or stories. You have your plot lines, I have my plot lines. You have your operating assumptions and I have mine. They're all equally valid. One's not better than the other. We just have to agree to disagree when we diverge. But I've just shown you that that can't be true. All stories are not equal. The underlying storylines that we are living out in life are not all equal. They cannot be. Some stories bring greater blessings, some stories bring lesser blessings to them. Some stories bear more fruit, wholesome and living fruit, than other stories do. John Bradshaw once said that life is about exchanging one set of problems for a better set of problems. I really love that line. Life is not about removing all your problems or solving all your problems. It's about exchanging one set of problems for a better set of problems. He could have easily have said, life's about exchanging one story for a better story. One story for a better story. Life's about exchanging one storyline, life's a bitch and then you die, for a better storyline. If you only have one prayer to make in life, let it be thank you. Christianity at its core is about being invited into a story. It's a beautiful, if a bit weird story, I'll acknowledge. It's a bit weird. And we shouldn't be afraid of the weirdness either. We should embrace it for ourselves. It's a weird story in some ways, and yet it's the best story that I know of. And if the goal of life is to exchange one story for a better story, then the Christian story is waiting for you and for me. to enter into it. It's the ultimate story that we're moving towards in life. But for that to work, we need to know what the story is. If we don't know the story, how can we enter into it? So what is the Christian story? 2 weeks ago, we watched the video from the Bible Project called The Story of the Bible. And I mentioned the story of the Bible is the Christian story. The Christian story is essentially the Bible, the story of the Bible. And in 5 minutes, the Bible Project presented the whole Christian story. Not into the details, of course. Not, that would be impossible. You can't take 1,109 pages in a Bible and convert it down to a five-minute video and think you're going to get all the details. But in the essential elements, the major steps, do you remember how it went, those of you who were here a couple of weeks ago? I'm suspecting not. Because as simple as it is, it's something you're going to have to repeat over and over again so that you know those essential elements of the story. If you want to learn something, you have to go over it again and again. And so I have simplified this for you. And if you find this interesting, I might print it out next week so you can take it with you if you find it helpful. So let me know. But these are the 6-7 simple steps. Step 1, humanity overthrows God. Step 2, God works for humanity's return through the people of Israel. Step 3, Israel fails when it too overthrows God. Step 4, God works for humanity's return through the Son of God. 5, humanity overthrows God by crucifying his Son to a cross. 6, God works for humanity's return by raising Jesus to new life. And 7, the church shares the story of Jesus Christ with the world until he returns. And over the next 7 weeks, I want to look carefully at each of the 7 steps. And my goal for you is that when we're done, you will know the Christian story in its essential elements sufficiently that if someone came to you and they said to you, can you explain to me what Christianity is about? Can you explain to me what this Christian story is? You'll be able to explain it to them. And that's going to take a bit of work on your part too. Because I can show you the basic plot line of the Christian story, what our Christian faith is about, but it's only going to take hold in you if you dedicate yourself to learning it so it can become part of your knowledge base. So what I decided to do is to take that video, that Bible project on the story of the Bible, I broke it down into 7 sections. And now it's only a 5-minute and 30-second video in its total, so each of these video sections are going to be much smaller. I'm going to show you the first video section, which is called, it's the creation. So let's take a look at that.
The Bible's an important book, but it's really long.
Yeah, it's a collection of many books written over a long period of time, but altogether they tell one unified story.
So, what's the story of the Bible?
Well, it begins by introducing us to a beautiful mind, the author of all reality, a being called God. And he has the power to take the dark chaos of the uncreated world and bring about order and beauty and a garden full of life.
And to crown this accomplishment, God appoints these creatures called humanity,
or in Hebrew, Adam.
And they're made as God's image.
Which means that they're commissioned to rule this beautiful world on God's behalf by harnessing all of its potential and creating even more beauty and order.
This is a story about humans using their power to do meaningful, life-giving work. But the question is, how?
Yeah, humanity now faces a choice that's represented by a fruit tree. So humans could partner with God and find freedom by trusting in his knowledge of good and evil.
Or
they could seize power and define good and evil on their own, which, God warns, will kill them.
And they hear the voice of a dark, mysterious creature that tells them the choice is simple. Take the fruit. It'll give you power and freedom to rule the world on your own terms.
And so they seize this knowledge, and as a result, they become suspicious and self-protective. It leads to fractured relationships, violent power grabs, and ultimately, a whole civilization, Babylon, that has redefined evil as good. And so, God scatters this corrupted human project.
And we're still living in the world of Babylon today, really. As humanity stands before this choice, the overthrowing of God, the story of the Bible, the story of the Christian faith begins with a mind. We just heard that. A beautiful mind who is called God. This mind is the source of everything in the material universe that we know of. We don't understand the mechanisms that this mind used to bring about creation, but we do recognize at times that there's an overarching intelligence at the center of the creative universe that we're a part of. This mind is responsible for the creation of humanity. We were created in the image of God, which means that we were created for the purpose of collaborating with God to bring creation to an even higher state of beauty and order. And as the video states, humanity stands before a choice. It's represented by a fruit tree. And that fruit tree is at the focal point of two divergent paths. And these two paths lead in a completely opposite direction to two different complete outcomes. They represent two different storylines, two different plot lines. One path represents our decision to collaborate with God by trusting in his knowledge of good and evil. And the other path represents humanity seizing power and defining good and evil for itself, and in the process, overthrowing God. So we're going to live life on our own terms, which God warns us leads to death. And as humanity stands before this choice, they hear the voice of a dark, mysterious presence telling them that the choice is rather simple. In reality, there is no choice. Take the fruit. It's almost like there's a dark storyline within our hearts from the very beginning that wants to choose the path that displaces God and putting ourselves in God's place. And this overthrowing of God is the critical choice that all of us have in life. And when we do this, when we take control of our own destiny, when we take control of our destiny, our destination, it's been told to us that our desire will lead us ultimately to death. And we know how the story goes. What do they choose? Which path does Adam and Eve and humanity choose? Are we going to collaborate with God, or are we going to seize power? Which is it? It's seize power, right? You just have to look around in the world to see people constantly seizing power in various secret situations and different political arrangements and different realities and different economic circumstances. Humanity overthrows God, replaces God with themselves. And according to the Bible, we fall into the reality of Babylon, the world rife with distrust and violence, where ends justify means. And this is all told in the first three chapters of the book of Genesis. And it's no accident that the first story that comes next in Genesis 4 is the story of Cain and Abel. And if you know the story of Cain and Abel, they become rivals. And Cain takes it upon himself to decide good and evil for himself and for his brother. And in that choice, he decides to kill his brother. And having overthrown God and claimed for themselves the right to define good and evil, humanity now finds it easy to overthrow each other, even when the other is our brother or sister. As many of you know, I've talked at length on this basic theme on Sunday mornings for the past couple of years, where we are all like that first couple, like humanity in the video, standing before the tree with a choice to make. Are we going to fire God and place our lives under our own management? Are we going to remove God from the God position and put ourselves in the God position of our lives? Are we going to sit upon our own thrones and displace God in doing so? Is that the choice that we're going to make in life and then rule in our own stead? And then we wonder where God is, why the world's the way it is, and why our lives are filled with such struggle. I go back to John Bradshaw. How the goal of life is to trade one set of problems for a better set of problems, to trade one story for a better story. Trade in one story that doesn't explain much at all, doesn't offer any sense of hope or fulfillment. We trade that for a better story that explains a lot of what's going on in the world that we're a part of. And I think it all begins with recognizing that you're before the tree. This isn't just something that happened a long time ago. You stand before the tree. And when we embrace the Christian story, we recognize ourselves before the tree, that fruit tree, and the choice that it represents. And we face, all of us, the same choice that Adam and Eve faced long ago, that every human being faces again and again in life. Will we allow God to sit in the God position in our lives, or will we overthrow God and replace God with ourselves? Do you recognize that choice that's facing you in the circumstances of your life? Do you understand how you continually face that choice day in and day out, circumstance in, circumstance out? It's not a one-time operation. It's just that having given in to it a long time ago in our lives, our own lives, it gets harder and harder to break free from the inclination to rule in God's place. It would be so lovely to think that we could just step down. Okay, Lord, I'm going to step out of the God position. I'm going to step down from the throne. I'm going to give you your holy place in my life again. But it would be so lovely to think that we could just do it like that and make that fundamental change in our lives, let go and let God. But it doesn't work that way. This time, Lord, I'm not going to seize the fruit. This time, Lord, I'm not going to seize the fruit. I'm not going to displace you. I'm not going to overthrow you. I'm not going to seize power in my life. I'm not going to run my life based on my own wisdom and my own side alone, God. I'm going to collaborate with you today. I'm going to work in partnership with you for my life and for the blessing of the world. That's such a lovely idea. Wouldn't it be nice if it was that simple? And of course, the tragedy for us today is that the world God created for us, the world that God wants us to join with him in making, is rooted powerfully in his love for us. And for all things, for all people, for all things. God's imagination is a world rooted in his love for all things. A world where perfect love reigns. God created a world where he desires our collaboration with him, and it's an unfinished project. That's the amazing thing. God didn't finish it for us. God put us into it to help him make it better. It's not only a top-down reality. We were made in God's likeness so that we could collaborate with him and build a world of peace and joy, of love and true freedom, a security, a place of peace, where it finds its home in our hearts today because God reigns in us and in all people. And when that happens, we don't need to fear anybody anymore. We don't need to be on guard against anybody anymore. This is the paradise the Bible describes at the very beginning. And this is the paradise we give up when we take the God position in our lives. And here's the problem. We're all living out stories. You're living out stories in your life. You're living out stories. Somehow they all fall below the dignity of what we were created to be. They fall below the dignity of our creation. And we might not go as far down the road as my neighbor did in saying that life's a bitch and then you die. We might not really agree with him on that. Although let's not delude ourselves either. But our stories are hardly big enough to grasp the reality of what we've been created to be. Our horizons are just so small. We are made in the likeness of God. We are made to collaborate with God. Anything less than this is a denial of who we are. And this is the Christian story. The original grace that we were made from, the original sin that we fell away from in our creation when we overthrew God, and we've replaced God with ourselves, and we have fallen into the world of Babylon. And the Bible says that there's no human way back to God. Having chosen to go it alone, the way now back is closed to us. But the story's not over. The way back is closed, but the way forward is open. That's the good news. We might not be able to go backwards into God, but we can go forward. And God, in fact, is ahead of us, making a path forward for us for our ultimate return. God has opened us a path for us, and we're going to hear more about that in the next few weeks as we go over the story of the Christian faith, the Christian story, the story of the Bible.